Healthcare Elsewhere, Episode 37.
Join us as John Cody shares the inspiring success stories of medical tourism patients and brings you insider tips straight from doctors and healthcare experts around the world. It's time for you to discover a whole new world of safe and affordable healthcare options. Your journey starts now. Welcome to Healthcare Elsewhere.
Hello, everyone. This is John Cody with Healthcare Elsewhere, and we have another great episode for you today. We're doing something a little bit different today, actually. I'm going to be talking to you, basically interviewing myself and telling you the story of how my wife Jennifer and I came to adopt three children from overseas, from Poland, and the kind of the medical tourism aspect of that and the background and the genesis of all that. So last week I was on a radio interview and the interviewer was asking me, well, you know, how did you get into medical tourism as a subject, you know, for your podcast? Why did you start doing that? And so I started telling him about the genesis of how, you know, Jennifer was a two-time cancer survivor. And that's a story for, you know, a whole other podcast, maybe for episode 100 or something like that. I'll interview Jennifer on the show about her journey through all of that. But in any case, we had decided because of Jennifer's cancer, it was too dangerous for her to have children. So we decided that we were going to go ahead and adopt our kids. And so we were looking in a bunch of different countries. We were looking in Asia and Central America and, you know, in Europe and a few different countries. And kind of out of the blue one day, our brother-in-law's mother, who had grown up in Poland and was originally from Poland, sent us a magazine that had an article. It was in Polish. She translated it for us. And it was all about, you know, international adoption in Poland and children that were available and waiting and so on. And so we kind of warmed up to the idea right away and decided to go do that. So, you know, the adoption process, for those of you who have been through it, know what an emotional roller coaster it is and how long it can take. It took almost 2 years for us to go through the whole process up to the point where we actually were bringing the children home. So, you know, we didn't know who they were going to be, obviously, at first. There's just a lot of paperwork involved and, you know, the home study and a lot of these other kinds of things. So in any case, we decided finally that we were going to go ahead and go to Poland to adopt our kids. And this was about 10 years ago when we finally completed the adoption. Actually, as we record this, it is May of 2014. And in March of this year was the 10-year anniversary of us bringing the children home and then becoming American citizens. So, you know, really cool, lots of fun. We had a little party for them and everything. But in any case, you know, this started, you know, 10 years ago. Before that, we started getting to the point where we were going to do this adoption. We look over in Poland and decide, yes, this is what we're going to do. So we sent all of our paperwork over there and the application process. And then eventually we get not a dossier, not a big, thick, you know, thing. We get basically a fax with six pieces of paper in it. And for what it was they were recommending or suggesting. Our referral was for a sibling group. They're all brothers and sisters of three kids. It was a five-year-old girl, a three-year-old boy, and a two-year-old boy. And they had been in an orphanage in state care over in Poland for approximately 2 years, or almost 2 years at that point. So all we got was basically, you know, kind of their birthday, the names of the mother and the father, and unfortunately their mother had passed away due to an illness at a young age, and so that's what brought them to being in state care. So we had very little information about them. There were no really medical records to speak of from their time before they came to the orphanage. Once they had gotten to the orphanage, they actually had extensive medical records. But as you'll hear in the interview, we kind of, you know, it was all in Polish, of course, and we had to get it all translated. And so, you know, that takes time and everything. So we eventually went over there and got that all taken care of. But these two sheets of paper on each child had basically one that was kind of, you know, their medical background for the last 2 years. So we knew a little bit about them and then a little bit about, you know, just kind of what their names were, when they were born, where they lived, where they were now, and things like that. And that was it. No picture, nothing. One of the things that was interesting to us also was the fact that Peter, our middle child, so that the children's names are Wanda, Peter, and Pavel. Wanda's the oldest, Peter is the middle, and Pavel is the youngest. Pavel is Paul in English. And, you know, we just, you know, we loved their names and decided to keep them. You know, we had picked out names if we had gotten younger. You know, we didn't know if we were going to have infants suggested to us or what. So in any case, we decided to keep their names. And so we got one of the things on the sheet for Peter was that he was deaf. But it also said that he was eligible for cochlear implants. And for those who were unaware, a cochlear implant is a technology. It's not just a hearing aid where it's like on, off, and volume, and that's it. This is actually an implant that goes on the outside of your skull and underneath your scalp, basically, that has a wire that goes into your inner ear, basically, and wraps around the cochlea and allows it to send a digital signal from the microphone on the outside that allows the individual to hear. So it excites, basically, and sends that digital signal, and it sends it to the auditory nerve, and then your brain processes it. So what's cool about that technology is it's, like I said, it's not just an on-off situation. You actually can program it. So Peter has the ability to, through Bluetooth now, with the, you know, the amazing technology that we have, he can actually listen to, have a conversation on an iPhone where he's just connected via Bluetooth. He's not actually plugged into it or listening to it up to his ear or anything like that. He gets plugged into a computer with an audio verbal therapist and audio programmer, basically, who runs through his program and is constantly tweaking it and changing it. And there are literally millions of permutations that are available to them to try and tweak and make. So they listen to how he's talking and the mistakes that he's making, like maybe he's dropping his S's or he's not saying his L's correctly or something like that. So they can take that information from his audio-verbal therapist and basically go in and program his hearing so that he hears better, so that he can then pronounce better. So it's an interesting and fascinating science, and it just keeps getting better and better all the time. You know, we kind of call him our bionic boy because he has a cochlear implant. The company that we actually have his with is called Advanced Bionics. And so he's our little bionic boy, and he's constantly getting upgrades. He's getting software upgrades, and every few years they come out with a new piece of hardware, and we buy him, you know, new hardware, just like when you upgrade your iPhone or your Android phone. He's constantly getting these new things. So in any case, I knew quite a bit about cochlear implants because at the time I was a pilot for an airline, and one of the guys that I used to fly with had two sons who were both deaf and both had cochlear implants. So I immediately called him and said, hey, we just got offered the opportunity to, you know, adopt these three children. One of them is deaf, and they said that he's eligible for a cochlear implant. Can you tell me more, you know, about the process? So he and I, we talked on the phone for quite a bit with his wife and actually got to talk to one of his sons on the phone and was able to understand him, and everything was great. So we knew that it was going to be a long, difficult road for us to go because the younger that you get them implanted with that sort of thing, the better it works out for them. So you want to get them as young as possible. But that's not to say that, you know, as an older child or even as an adult, you can't get some great benefits out of it. So armed with that knowledge and knowing that it was going to be a long journey and that there would be difficulties, but that this was, you know, something that technology could overcome, it would only get better with time, we decided that was not too much of a hurdle for us to get over. And so we decided to go ahead and fly over to Poland and meet the three children and, you know, get some more basically kind of information about, you know, who they were and what was going on and whether or not this was going to be a good fit. So this was required by the government of Poland. They require you to come over, meet the children in person, talk with the local government officials and make sure that, you know, everything's copacetic. And then if everything's good, then you may proceed with the adoption. So, and let me back up for a second, too. Before we even got to that point, there was, we basically talked to some local adoption experts who were doctors and physicians, and they recommended that we get a video that explained or that showed, you know, the children eating and playing and interacting with other kids to get a better idea of whether or not they had any other, deficiencies one way or the other. So when we had requested that, they said, fine, that'll take a couple of weeks. So they actually brought a videographer in and videotaped them doing all of these things for about 20 minutes. And I'll never forget, I was walking through the airport in DFW and Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport in Dallas, Texas, and I was about to come home from the end of a trip. And my wife called. And I thought that was unusual because she knew I was going to be home in, you know, about 4 hours. So why would she be calling now? And all of a sudden it clicked. We hadn't heard anything from the agency in a while. And I just kind of knew that, oh, okay, we must have the, some more information from them. And sure enough, that's what it was. And she said, hey, they got the video done. You got to remember, this was 10 years ago. YouTube didn't exist, basically, then. The internet was, you know, getting video on the internet was a lot more difficult. And so for what they ended up doing was they shot it and put it on VHS tape and then mailed it to our agency in Chicago. And then they had to take it. It was the European version. So they had to get it converted over to, you know, the American version that would work in our regular VHS tape, and then they mailed it to us. So this was a several week process, and we were on pins and needles. And so finally, we put the tape in, and you know, the whole family's all sitting around, and this is the first time we're ever going to see our kids, you know, potentially. This is really, you know, a very emotional and interesting and cool moment. And so we put it on, and there's the kids. They're outside, and they're playing and riding bicycles and having a good time. And so they showed them, you know, doing a variety of different things. And then we sent that tape over to our pediatrician so that he could take a look at it, and he thought it all looked good. And what was amusing was he didn't know anything about the background of the kids. And the only real major comment he said was, yeah, he goes, they all look great. They look healthy. Their you know, motor skills are all good. Everything looks good. But I'll tell you, I would be a little happier if I saw the oldest boy, Peter, if he was talking a little more. He didn't seem to talk very much, and we said, oh, well, he's deaf. He said, oh, you got to be kidding me. No, then, okay, great. Well, he's doing great then. Don't worry about it. And we told him about the cochlear implant and all that, so everything was good. So we fly over to Poland, and it happened to be on Halloween, which is kind of a big holiday here in the U.S. where the kids get all dressed up and go have fun. And so anyway, we fly over to Poland, and, you know, it's an all-night-long flight, and then we got a four-hour drive to get down to the orphanage where it was. And so we get there, we stay in a hotel overnight, and we go to meet our kids the next morning. And so we've got a million things racing through our minds, and, you know, what's this going to be like, and, how is this going to go? And it was just, you know, really a fascinating thing. And so our experience kind of, you know, emotionally to deal with all this. And so, you know, we get in there and we're there with our interpreter, and we have a liaison from the adoption agency. And then there's two people from the local state government who are basically representing the state and the courts in this process. And then we're there in the orphanage with the director of the orphanage. And so there's a whole bunch of us in this room. We're all talking and translating and going back and forth and getting to know each other for about 20 minutes or half an hour. Now, we think we're just going to be in meetings all day, and that's all we're going to be doing. Well, that we're not going to meet the kids today. We just thought we were going to be in meetings all day. Well, all of a sudden, the door opens, and this woman walks in, one of the caretakers, and she's holding Peter in her arms, and she walks over to me and just drops him in my lap, smiles, and walks away. And so that was my first meeting with my son Peter, and he kind of looked at me and had a big smile on his face. And, you know, it was a really cool and fun moment, you know, of just, wow, that we really weren't expecting that at this point. And then a few minutes later, she comes, so I'm, you know, kind of waving to the camera and saying hi, and maybe if there's enough interest, we can put that quick video that we have up on the website so people can see it on the show notes page. But in any case, next thing I know, I point over towards the door, and we turn the camera around, and there's Wanda. She's walking in for the first time, and we got to meet her. And then Pavel was in a different ward. He was with the infants, and he was on his nap time, so we didn't meet him for about another hour or so. So, you know, we meet the kids, and we brought bears from them. You know, we'd gotten them some teddy bears and things and brought them little chocolates and whatnot. And so, of course, they're stuffing their face with chocolates and having a good time. So we get to meet all them. We have a great, you know, time and everything. And so the next day we come back, get to spend more time with them. And, you know, it's just a very exhausting and overwhelming experience. But now we're starting to get into, you know, the medical aspect of it, you know, saying, well, can we see their medical dossiers? Can we see, you know, all of their medical information? And of course, it's in Polish, and our translator can translate the words, but he's not a medical doctor. So he's translating it, and he's telling us all, you know, we're hearing all these, you know, medical terms that we don't know what the heck that is. And so there's no real internet that we can get on. You know, iPhones didn't exist back then. You couldn't just Google stuff. Google didn't really hardly even exist back then in 2003 when all this was happening. So we go through, you know, as best we can and with the translators and trying to figure out, you know, what kind of medical issues the kids may have had. And Peter had had bronchitis when he first came into the orphanage and was actually very, very sick at the time, but had gotten kind of over that. And then Pavel was very, very quiet and sedate at the time. He was only about two and a half. And it turned out, we found out later, after we took the children out of the orphanage and they were ours, you know, we had completed the adoption about 4 months later. It took four trips over 4.5 or 5 months. It was a long process. And we were not allowed to take the children out to go get medical exams while they were still under state care. They had to be our children before they would allow us to do that. That's just the way that the government works over there, and we accepted that, and that was fine. But they were very forthcoming with giving us, you know, pretty much any information that we wanted. So you know, we're kind of going through all this and finding out, you know, what had they been tested for, what hadn't they been tested for. You know, so we went through this whole process, figure out what's going to need to be done once we get them, you know, out of the orphanage. So what was interesting too was, you know, so we have to leave after a couple of days. We're going to head back to the U.S. and come back a week or two later. And we're thinking we're bringing the kids home with us sometime around, you know, before Christmas. We're going to have the kids home for Christmas. We're all excited. My wife's very excited. And that's when they kind of drop the bombshell on us and say, oh, no. This is going to take 6 or 8 months. We're going, we already waited, you know, all this time. It just seemed to take forever to get through the process. And, you know, just like, I'm not picking on Poland. This is a bureaucracy just like anywhere else in the U.S. or wherever. It doesn't matter. It just takes them time to go through their process. So, you know, you don't want to get in front between a mother and her children. And so Jennifer was obviously quite upset when they told us that, you know, you're going to have to, it's going to be sometime, you know, maybe next June or something like that, or May, before we complete this. And this is November 1st at this point, so we were not happy. So in any case, we determined that, okay, well, there's no way it's going to happen before the end of the year. And as far as we were concerned, these are our kids now. We have bonded with them. We get to spend a couple of days playing with them and getting to know them. And then we had to leave, which was, you know, very difficult for us to do. And it was difficult for the children as well. They didn't really understand what was happening. I mean, they knew that we were going to be, you know, their parents and everything, but they didn't get why we had to leave. So we're trying to explain all that to them. And we decided, well, there's no way we're going to leave our kids alone for Christmas. So since we couldn't bring them to us for Christmas, we went back to them for Christmas. So we spent almost 3 weeks over the Christmas time frame going back to Poland and going with them for all their, you know, Christmas celebrations and having a great time. And, you know, it was incredible. It was very heartwarming and a lot of fun, and we're glad that we did it. So, you know, let's fast forward now a few months to February. We go back. We're getting more of the paperwork done. We have our court date. Everything's, you know, kind of coming together. And during all of this time now, I'm dealing with my insurance company and NYU, the New York University, has, you know, medical center, and their cochlear implant center, where Peter is going to be getting the surgery. We're already working with them in advance because it takes time to, you know, set this all up. So we had been getting Peter's medical dossier basically together, translated into English, and sent over to the doctors at NYU so they could start doing everything that they needed to do to find, to verify that he was in fact a good candidate for a cochlear implant, and that, you know, everything was going to be good to go. So we were working on this process for the several months that we were over there doing this, and that actually helped us when we petitioned the court for the final time to get the kids home faster than what we had originally hoped, because we basically kind of took a leap of faith and went ahead and scheduled the surgery. The insurance company had been through everything. They approved it with the rider that, you know, the children must be legally and officially adopted as your children. And the day that that happens, then they're under your insurance and everything else. So if you're looking at doing this kind of thing, you know, talk with your insurance company in advance and make sure that, you know, and find out exactly what their limitations are and, you know, how this all comes, that there's no waiting periods or riders. You know, I don't know what other insurance companies may or may not have, but that's what we were looking at and concerned about, because, I mean, cochlear implant surgery is upwards of $80,000. That usually includes the hardware that goes along with it, you know, as far as, you know, the hearing aid and all the rest of the stuff, and the processor and all the pieces and parts that go with that. But what that does not include is the ongoing audioverbal therapy. So he goes to a professional audioverbal therapist twice a week, and that costs thousands. I mean, these are very expensive people who are very good at what they do. And our insurance covered that as well. But you need to really take a good hard look at, you know, whatever your child's medical issue may or may not be, you need to kind of figure out what are going to be the long-term, not just the cost, but the cost in, you know, in time and in travel and in, you know, basically research. And, you know, in the case of a child who's deaf like that, you have to understand that when you turn a cochlear implant on, you know, he was 4 by the time we got the surgery done. He cannot understand what we are saying. It's not like you turn it on and boom, all of a sudden, yeah, he can hear things and he knows what's going on. So for him, it was essentially like he was a newborn child as a hearing person. So the very first time that he heard this, he kind of looked around and went, oh, what was that? So it was me knocking on the door. I was outside the door. He couldn't see me. And he's going, what is that? And all of a sudden, the dogs start barking. And he's looking around and saying, well, I hear another noise. What is that? So he can see the dogs barking. He knew that our dogs barked, but he had never heard it before. So now he's going, oh, well, that's what a dog barking sounds like. Okay. Why are they barking? Oh, they're looking at the door. Oh, what? That was some. So then the door, he goes and he opens the door and he sees me standing there. And so he realizes, okay, if someone knocks on the door, that means I need to go to the door, open the door, and look, the dogs are barking. That means someone is at the door. That's a secondary cue of that. So that is the level of, you know, understanding that he needed to, that his brain needed to go through to rewire his synapses and become a hearing child. So this is a very long process. So, okay, so let's, you know, basically get to the point where, you know, we're done with all the court dates, everything's good, they've approved us to adopt the children, and then we're going to come back for one final trip, pick up the kids, but now we have to wait in country for another 5 weeks until we get all of their paperwork done, because we had to apply for a passport to bring them to the United States. So again, here's the international aspect of it, and just the bureaucracy that goes along with it. So I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break for just a second here and hear the Onwards Medical Breakthrough of the Day, and I'll tell you the rest of the story when we come back.
The Onwards Medical Breakthrough of the Day, spanning the internet to bring you a constant variety of cutting-edge medical procedures and treatments worldwide.
Today's Onwards Medical Breakthrough of the Day is, of course, about using stem cell therapy to repair hearing loss. So this one's titled, What If Doctors Could Grow a New Working Inner Ear from a Person's Own Skin Cells? Or repair the damaged inner ear from within. So this is a really exciting article that talks about how scientists at Stanford University, and I know there's development on this all around the world in a lot of different areas as well, where they're trying to develop a biological method to repair the damaged cochlea using stem cells. By mimicking the steps involved in the formation of embryonic mouse ears, Stanford scientists have produced stem cells in the laboratory that look and act very much like hair cells, which are the sensory cells that normally reside in the inner ear. If they can generate hair cells in the millions, it could lead to significant scientific and clinical advances along the path to curing deafness in the future. This is very exciting to us personally, of course, and to our son Peter, and to the millions of deaf people around the world who could basically use, you know, natural hearing, and we're really looking forward to seeing where this goes. So you can see the link to this at the show notes page on this episode, and now back to the rest of the story. And we are back. Okay, so we've gotten to the point where we're just about to adopt the kids and go live with them in Poland. We got an executive apartment in downtown Warsaw, in Old Town, in the Stare Miasto. It was a very beautiful area. It was a very beautiful apartment. We had a great time. So, you know, we go and we get the children. My wife went and I went for a two-night stay real quick in Krakow, which is a beautiful old city. The people were so friendly over there. I can't say that enough about the Polish people were just went out of their way to make us feel welcome when they understood, you know, what we were doing and adopting children and this and that. They were just very, very friendly people. The food was fantastic. Everything was great about the experience, other than the bureaucracy. But again, that's just and dealing with any government. So we get down there and we go to the orphanage, and they're having a party for the kids with all the rest of the kids, and the caretakers obviously are very emotional because they're so attached to the kids. They've spent a lot of time with them over the last 2 years, and a lot of tears, a lot of hugging going on. And they had told us, hey, you need to bring clothes for them because they have, you know, they have nothing. They own nothing. Everything is the property of the orphanage, and they need that for the other kids. So we change them into all their new clothes and big jackets, and it's March, but you know, it's Poland. It's freezing cold out still. It's the middle of winter over there still. And so we get them all dressed up, and everyone says their goodbyes, and we put them in the car, and we buckle them all up, and we start driving down the road for a four-hour drive up to Warsaw. And of course, 30 seconds after we leave, Peter's undoing his buckle and, you know, all this good stuff. And so we went from no kids to three kids basically essentially overnight. So now we're responsible for the kids, and we have a bunch of appointments set up in Warsaw that our facilitator had helped us with to get, this is our adoption facilitator, to get us basically all the medical things that we needed to get done. So while the children were there in the orphanage, we did have them get tested for, you know, AIDS and hepatitis and all the rest of the normal things that you would get tested for in an adoption scenario like that. So they were able to get that done. We just were not allowed to go with them or bring them or pick the doctors or anything. We said we would like to have these tests done, and they were done for us. So we got the results from that back. We had them translated, and our doctor back home, you know, verified them. Everything was good to go. So now, you know, we arrive up in Warsaw and begin the rest of our journey together as a new family, and we start, you know, kind of learning how to live with each other. And, you know, you've got to understand, we have three kids now. One of them is two and speaks probably about 20 phrases in Polish, so he's really easy to, you know, get him start speaking English. Wanda, our oldest, she speaks two languages, actually, at the time, Polish and Romani. And so she's learning to speak English, and she's taking me by the hand down to the little local grocery store where we would get our daily dinner, you know, and everything to cook. And she's talking away and telling everyone about how this is my new daddy and everything. It was really cool and fun and heartwarming and everything. But so we set up the appointments now for the children to see a local pediatrician to, now that they're, you know, our children, it's official, we've adopted them, they're officially ours, they're just not U.S. citizens yet, they're not legal to travel until they get their Polish passports. So we spent four or five trips to the doctor's office to get them different, you know, health screenings and take a look at, you know, other things. So we found out while we were there, and again, we had an interpreter that came with us, and the doctor spoke some English, that all three children actually had a heart murmur. So that was a little bit of a cause for concern. We didn't know anything about that previously. It wasn't in any of their records. The doctor gave them a very physical and a very thorough physical for all three of them, and, you know, came to the conclusion that really their only major issue was that they had been well nourished. There wasn't any malnutrition issues or anything like that. So, you know, all that was good to go. And, you know, she was fairly convinced. And she said, you know, when you get them home, take them to your local pediatrician and get them checked out. And she was fairly confident that their the heart murmur would cure itself over time, that there was no major defect. And apparently this was not an uncommon kind of a thing. But, you know, as new parents, of course, we were a little concerned about all that. And so that was really the only major thing that, you know, kind of came up when we were getting them all tested. We did, you know, consider, well, should we wait to get their shots in the U.S.? And so this is when we actually contacted Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. It was only about a half an hour drive from our house. And we found out after we had been through the process that they actually had an international adoption health check, basically a part of the hospital that you could go either for pre or post, and we didn't find out about it till we got back. So once we did get back, we eventually got them enrolled in that program, and we went in and they gave them another whole workup and gave us the tests and recommended shots that we should get them and everything. And yeah, shot day in the U.S. was not fun. The poor kids thought we were torturing them or something, because they ended up getting, I don't know, 8 or 10 shots or something like that over about a 2-week period. So to make sure, you know, they had been completely covered, because their records were incomplete. We just were not sure what had been actually done or not and this and that. So we, you know, eventually got all that taken care of. So, you know, we're in Poland, things are going along, you know, okay. The second day, let me back up just a little bit, Pavel, our youngest one, is all of a sudden, he just kind of starts crying, and he's kind of fidgety, and he's just not doing well. We can see that he's just not comfortable, and he can't fall asleep, and he's cranky because, you know, he can't fall asleep. And no matter what you did, we just could not get him to fall asleep, and he just was up. And then we started noticing after about five, 6 hours or something, he was starting to itch all over. So the next morning, we take him back to the doctor. They do some tests, and it turns out that he had scabies, which is kind of a skin, you know, rash kind of a thing. And so this was causing him to start really itching. And apparently he had had this, and it had been kind of, you know, I'm not exactly sure the genesis of when this all started, but he had been pretty quiet, you know, during the whole adoption process and everything. And now he was, you know, starting to get more active. But this was a big issue because he wasn't getting any sleep. So we ended up, you know, finding out from the doctor, yes, he has scabies, and we're gonna have to put this cream on and do, you know, all the stuff that we had to do. So that took about a week or so to get straightened out, and that was really Pavel's, you know, kind of biggest thing that he had. He had no, you know, there were no issues with, you know, deafness, and he was not really, didn't have bronchitis when he went into the orphanage like his brother did. And then Wanda was actually very healthy. She really didn't have any issues at all. You know, from the time that she was in the orphanage, you know, again, they were very well fed, very well taken care of. We were very impressed with, you know, the orphanage itself and the love and the care and the feeding. I mean, they got three full meals every day and then three snacks in between, and just, you know, and we were there a lot. I mean, we were there all the time for months and months. So, you know, we were really impressed with the way that the kids were treated and everything. So that all went great. So, you know, as we're getting towards, you know, the end of this story and kind of wrapping this all up, so now, you know, we're getting a pretty good handle on, you know, dealing with the local doctors and getting the kids what they need. And, you know, we're kind of probably overreactive, you know, new parents, you know, trying to make sure that we're taking care of everything that needs to get taken care of, while also making sure that Peter is being, you know, that everything, all of his Peter, his paperwork is taken care of and everything's good to go and ready to go, so that when we land in the States, that he's ready to go for surgery. So they're going to have a pre-op meeting with him for them to do, you know, final check. And I don't remember the exact dates. I didn't go back and look it up. But I believe it was about maybe 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks after we got the kids home. And they were, we didn't want to just go home and the next day you're in the hospital and getting major surgery. It just didn't seem fair. It would be too shocking for him. So I think we waited. It was about 2 or 3 weeks before we went. So we took him down to New York City, and he got to meet with the surgeon and the nurses that he was going to be working with and his audioverbal therapist and everything. And, you know, he was great. We're trying to explain to him. And of course, he didn't use American Sign Language. He had no real way to communicate with the world. And I probably should have, you know, mentioned that at the very beginning of the story. For him, it was, you know, he would just kind of point at things. He watched what everybody else was doing and would follow along and mimic. And, you know, if you weren't really paying close attention, you wouldn't really notice that he was even deaf. It didn't slow him down in any way, really, when he was talking and or hanging out with the other kids. But, of course, he had no audio skills at all. He couldn't speak to you. He couldn't say any words. He didn't speak any languages. So there was a lot of kind of grunting and pointing and making noises at things. And so, you know, the day comes for his surgery, and he was a very, very active child, and we were concerned, and the doctors were concerned, that he was going to be, you know, tearing all of these bandages off of his head and everything else. So what they ended up doing was they wrapped his hands up and put, you know, kind of splints on his hands and wrapped them all up so he couldn't really touch anything. So we have a picture with him pretending to hold a phone, you know, kind of up to his ear with his hands all wrapped up and everything, and took pictures after his surgery. He was all excited about that. And so, you know, it was a little confusing for him because he, you know, he comes to America, he's got this new family, things are going great, and then all of a sudden he's in the hospital and he's got to travel. You know, it's a couple hour drive for us to get down there for him to do that. And so, you know, in his case, you know, we got him down there, we got the surgery done, he recovered just fine. And then 6 months later, or I think it was actually 4 months later, now that it's healed, now we're going to go back and get him turned on for the first time. So again, they don't immediately just turn it on. And I think with the technology that they have today, I believe they do that a lot more quickly, because when we got his second cochlear implant done and implanted, that was about 3 years ago. I think they only waited about 4 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, and then he was good to go and they were ready to turn it on and start, you know, training him on that ear. So again, when he got his second ear, we're kind of fast forwarding a little bit here, just because he can hear with his left ear in that cochlear implant, now you put a cochlear implant in the right ear and his brain is going, wait a minute, this is all new, I don't understand what any of this is. So again, we had to reprogram and retrain. And because the technological leaps are happening so fast right now, his right ear, which has only been implanted for about 3 years now, is actually better at receiving signals and giving him better comprehension of a conversation than his left ear, which had been implanted for basically 6 years longer, which was interesting to us. So we're actually just about to get him another upgrade at this point, where he's going to be getting you know, the brand new latest technology that uses Bluetooth, so he can talk on the phone or listen to his iPod or watch a movie, you know, through Bluetooth without having to actually use the microphone, which is great technology, but he loses some of, you know, what is happening there. And especially if it's a noisy room, it's difficult for him to understand, you know, what's happening and who, if someone's talking to him and there's a lot of other things going on, like a movie going on and people are cooking and talking and walking around, it's just hard for him to track a conversation with all of those things happening. So, you know, we go down to NYU. I'll go back to kind of close this up. to get Peter turned on for the very first time. And, you know, we get all dressed up and we go down to NYU and he's, you know, excited. He knows there's something big going on and we're trying to explain this to him through, you know, we used a little bit of American Sign Language and we had already been giving him audio-verbal training and trying to teach him by watching our lips and reading our lips. He started learning how to read lips and he's very, very good at that. So you have to cover your mouth when you're doing, you know, put your hand in front of your mouth or a piece of paper, because when you're doing audio-verbal therapy with him, you don't want him to read your lips. You want him to hear what you're saying. And he's really, really good at cheating in that way. So yeah, he's 14 now and really, really good at reading lips. So we get him in there and they say, look, you have no idea. We have no idea how he's going to react to this. Some kids cry. Some kids are just, you know, they have tears in their eyes and wonder. And other kids just don't react at all because they don't understand what it is that is happening. So, and that last scenario is exactly what happened to Peter. So they turn the thing on and they start running beeps and louder and louder and louder until all of a sudden he kind of picked his head up and looked around like, hey, wait a minute, what was that? I something just happened in my brain and I don't know what that was. But he didn't really react, you know, emotionally in any way. And of course, you know, Jennifer and I are crying and just so happy that, you know, our son now can hear. And, you know, and Pavel and Wanda were, you know, excited to be there and they're kind of watching all this. And they know, you know, that he's deaf, obviously. And so they kept being excited about saying, you know, Peter will hear now, Peter will hear now. And we had kind of worked with them and coached them that once the end of the session was over, we wanted them to go over to him and say, Peter, we love you. So that was the very first thing that he got to hear from his brother and sister. And of course, he gave them a hug. He didn't really understand what those words meant because he didn't understand language at that point. But he understood that he had a brother and a sister and a mother and a father who truly loved him. And, you know, and he knew that something big was going on in his life. And so since then, it's been, you know, a very long journey and, you know, some very high successes and some very low failures. And I mean, it's a very up and down journey of having a child with cochlear implants. So, you know, I hope this kind of gives you an insight and an overview about, you know, why I'm so passionate and my wife is so passionate about medical tourism and why we started this podcast, because we wanted to, you know, educate people about what's going on out there. And, you know, this was a little bit different case scenario, obviously, for us, but we've been getting more and more requests even before I started this podcast to kind of tell this story, to put it down on paper or maybe write a book about it someday or something like that. And we may do that. But I wanted to talk about it here for our listeners to kind of let them know, you know, whether you're adopting or not, or, you know, traveling in another country or looking to do something in another country, you just can't take, you know, whatever. If someone tells you you can't do that, then find somebody else, you know, who tells you can, and then vet them out and make sure that their research is solid. You know, when we first started telling our family we were going to go overseas and adopt, they thought that was great. Well, until we told them that we were trying to get two kids, and then eventually it turned into three because the sibling group that they offered us happened to be three kids, right? And they're all brother and sister. There was no way we were going to break that family up. I mean, they're a sibling group, and they're, you know, we were going to keep them together come hell or high water. There was no question about that, even though it was very overwhelming for us the very first year, you know, trying to learn how to be parents and coming from having, you know, we had two dogs, and now all of a sudden we have, you know, three kids. And so this was all brand new for us, and they didn't speak the language. We didn't speak their language, you know, so we learned some Polish. They learned, you know, English fairly quickly. Within 6 months, you know, all three of them had enough language skills to, you know, to kind of tell us what they needed and wanted in life and everything. And within a year, it was kind of fun too, to have Wanda talking to us in a heavy Eastern European accent in English, you know, our own daughter. It was a lot of fun to hear that. But then eventually that all went away. And Pavel never really did even have an accent. He pretty much started talking like, you know, an American English kid speaking English almost right away because he was so young and, you know, your mind is so plastic when you're that young and everything. So it was a really cool experience, obviously. Lots of highs, lots of lows, and just very emotional. But overall, we wouldn't change it for anything. And so, you know, the biggest challenge for us was, you know, making sure that we knew what we were getting into, you know, medically, that there wasn't going to be, I mean, if they had come back and said, well, Peter can't have cochlear implants, you know, would we still have accepted, you know, them as a sibling group? And once we met them, there was no question. It was kind of, I think the Polish government's pretty smart in that way, really, because, you know, when you're looking at a piece of paper and no picture, it's easier to, I shouldn't say it's easier, it's you can make that decision less emotionally, and you can look at it and say, well, is this realistically something that we can handle? Because we had specific guidelines that we had given the Polish government and said, well, look, we'd only take kids up to age six. We'd prefer a sibling group, and we want them to have correctable medical and physical deficiencies. Because Jennifer had been through this whole cancer process, and I just didn't want to have to deal with two, you know, it was already enough that there were three, and, you know, then one of them's deaf. Holy cow, this is a kind of a big deal. But we decided to go ahead and move forward with it anyway, because we felt confident that with cochlear implants and the technology that that would improve his life to the point where we'd be able to handle that. And even if we got back to the States, obviously, there was no question. Once we met them the first time, after that first day, I mean, it was an overwhelming day. But we knew that, hey, these are our kids. There's no way we're going to, you know, change that at this point, whether he could get cochlear implants or not. That just never entered the equation. But, you know, for us, it was important that we had all of the information and we knew exactly what we were getting into before, you know, we went through the whole process and the legal process and the medical process and everything else of adopting our three kids. So hopefully this was insightful to you with regard to, you know, a little bit more about me, my family and my wife Jennifer and our three kids, and let you know a little bit more about me personally and why we got involved in doing this medical tourism podcast, but also some good nuggets in there, hopefully, about, you know, the process that we went through. And, you know, it wasn't just NYU that we had looked at, by the way. We looked at several different doctors and several different locations around the country for Peter's cochlear implant surgery. And actually, he had already been approved and was scheduled to have cochlear implant surgery in, I think it was May of that year. And when we made the official petition, they asked us, do you want him to have the surgery here in Poland, which would have cost us nothing, right, because they would have done it over there, or do you want to take them back to America? And for us, you know, I knew that my insurance was going to cover it. There was obviously a deductible and everything, and we had saved and were prepared for all that. But we wanted him to get it done in the United States because they have different hardware and the technology is just different. And so at the time, we just wanted to make sure that he had, you know, the hardware and software and everything that was set up inside of his head was for, you know, the American market where it would be easier to get that taken care of. And that's why we decided to, you know, use doctors in the United States. We could have gone out to California or a couple other different places. We did the research and we're very comfortable with the doctors at NYU. They did a fantastic job, you know, with the whole process and going through all of his audioverbal therapy afterwards. And then his second implant, we actually got done down in Birmingham, Alabama. Again, it happened to be, it's about 2 hours away drive. We could have gone back to NYU, but we felt that, you know, locally it was close enough if he had any issues or whatever. And the doctors were very, very experienced. They had done many, many implants, and there was no doubt in my mind that that was the way to go. And as a postscript, one kind of last little thing, the doctor who ended up doing the surgery for our son Peter had actually done the surgery for my friend's two boys who were both deaf as well. He was one of the first ones who was qualified in the U.S., I believe, to do that surgery, and they had gotten it done fairly early on. So we felt very comfortable with him at the time, you know, working with him. And then we just decided that, you know, it was so ubiquitous and a lot of people are doing it across the country now that it was fine for us to go ahead and do it right there in a fairly close area, which was only 2 hours away. So again, thanks very much. We'd love to hear from you on the show notes page. You know, you can comment down there below or get on Facebook and tell us what you think. If this was, you know, good content for you, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something from it. And I thank you all again very much for listening and spreading the word about, you know, medical tourism and the fact that this is, you know, giving people options where maybe they think that they don't have options in the first place. So again, you can find the notes, the show notes, the links to everything that we talked about here at healthcareelsewhere.com. And you can also join us on Facebook at facebook.com/healthcareelsewhere. Thanks very much. And we'll see you on the other side. Next show is tomorrow. So yeah, we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to Healthcare Elsewhere. Has this episode left you inspired, wanting to take action right now? Good news! The Healthcare Elsewhere community is growing by the minute, and it's already filled with other people who are excited to finally get the treatment they deserve. You can join us at facebook.com/healthcareelsewhere, and we'll see you next time on Healthcare Elsewhere.